This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey folks, Pete Caliendo here, Baseball Outside the Box. Thanks for joining us on the show today. We are going to have a great one. You're on Facebook Live with Pete Caliendo and Zan Barksdale. And also, you are going to be on YouTube. So some of you will be watching on Facebook Live. If you got any questions, please ask. If you don't, you know, we'll have the questions for you. We'll try to make sure that you could see Zan well and hear him. We got a little reflection, but we'll be okay. All right. Listen, now let me tell you a little bit about him. This is the founder. He's got a lot of Twitter followers. This is the founder of CatcherCon. You've heard a lot about it. Fantastic conference. Some of the best people in the U.S. and the world attend. So it is a fantastic place. Also, he is a coach with the USA 14U national team. He coached at Louisville, outstanding university in East Tennessee State, along with, let me give you his website, catching/101.com. And let me introduce to you our good friend, Zan Barksdale. Zan, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Pete, thanks for having me on. I've seen you all over the place. You've interviewed some great people. You got some great podcasts on your site. And I think you're doing a lot of good things on Twitter and Facebook as well. So excited to be here, man. You keep up the good work, too.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm trying to get you good on Facebook Live so people can see you.
Let's make sure you get my good side. You got to get my good side. I don't know which one that is, but I'm expecting you to find it.
I'm learning here, man. Technology. And as I said, I was going to apologize. Might as well apologize on the air ahead of time every time I mess up your name.
No worries. It's Zan. Yeah. So it's short for Alexander. Like I said, it sounds like Z-A-N, but anytime your name starts with an X, it definitely causes some room confusion.
Yeah, that's all right. But I'll tell you what, it's a cool name. And I think I like the name. So it, it's great. It sounds like a baseball name too. And by the way, didn't mention, I believe you were with the Atlanta Braves, right, in professional baseball.
Yeah, I've spent a couple of years with those guys.
Yeah, super. I'll tell you what, we love to jump in right away. And here's the thing I love to jump in about. You know, this is a great time. Everybody's at home. You know, I'm when it comes to this virus going on, I'm pretty positive from the standpoint that I read up a lot. I do a lot of research. I see some really bright things happening. I really think things are going to change here very soon for us. But in the meantime, you've got a lot of students, obviously. You've got a lot of players out there. And I'd love to get your input on some of the things that you're discussing with your students, what they could be doing home. Because this is going to be about, it's going to be about catching, but they also got to be ready soon, especially like high school players, you know, that maybe the season starts or even your travel teams. What are some of the advice you're giving some of your players to help them while they're home indoors preparing for the season?
You know, I think that's a great question. It seems like the hot topic right now with everything going on with coronavirus. I think there's really one big distinction that you have to make first, and that's what is your goal and what are you trying to do right now? Depending on your age and your playing history and all sorts of other variables, I think you can really kind of fall into one or two camps. You can be a guy that, you know, needs to keep pushing. Maybe you're at the age where you want to get recruited for colleges or pro scouts are trying to see you and you got to stay sharp, or you're a pitcher and your arm has to stay in shape and you have to be ready to play, you know, basically as soon as the country kind of opens up and we get the word go. And then there's another group of players that I think need to focus on building their body, maybe taking some rest, taking some time off of throwing, you know, all the stuff with Pitch Smart and the things that have come out over the past couple of years, talking about overuse injuries and how much time you should take off. It's some of those things that a lot of these players have gotten recommendations that, you know, you need to try to find a 6 to 8 week window sometime throughout the year where you just don't throw any and you just give your arm a break. And in the real world, you know, it sounds great, but it's really difficult if you're a middle school or high school player and you have summer ball and you're trying to go out and get exposure, and then you go into fall ball and you try to go to camps and showcases, and then your high school baseball starts, and then, it, you know, it just starts all over again. So a lot of people feel pressured to do, I don't know if too much is the right word, but to stay busy all throughout the year. And for a lot of players, this is a good time where you can, you know, focus on giving your body a break, giving your arm a rest, trying to learn up, you know, as much as you can about nutrition, or trying to, you know, put on some weight. I know a lot of the gyms and weight rooms are closed, but I've seen some really creative things people are doing online, and figuring out ways how they can continue to stay in shape and try to build muscle for a young group of players. So it is tough, and it's more challenging for some people than others. But that would be the first distinction I would make, is I would say, let's figure out where we need to put our focus. And is it on, you know, building the physical side, or is it being ready as soon as possible?
You know, you talk about, I've heard you talk about mobility and strength being the key for catchers. You know, during this time, obviously, there's ways that you can increase your strength, increase your mobility. Can you explain a little bit about, you know, maybe how to do that while they're at home, and what's the result of that?
Sure. That's a great question, you know, and really they are related, because they both deal with the physical aspect of, you know, being a physical player, but at the same time, they're both very different as well. We can talk about mobility first, and we can maybe talk about this later in the show, but one of the big trends in baseball, and it's starting at the professional level and it's trickling, you know, all the way down, catchers are, you know, utilizing more stances and different stances now more than ever. A lot of guys are getting on one knee stances, or, you know, kickstand stances, or right knee down, left knee down. It's kind of trying to find your own way of how we can maximize the amount of strikes that we get at the bottom of the strike zone. But what you find is with a lot of younger guys, a lot of guys just don't have the mobility through their hips and ankles especially, that really allow them to get into a good position. Especially when you're asking them to now be even lower than they ever have been before. So the two areas that I focus on the most would be the hips and the ankles. And it's amazing. It doesn't take a ton of time. It doesn't take a ton of fancy equipment. There's a lot of different exercises. You can go to some of my website. I put some on Twitter. You just Google hip mobility or ankle mobility, or look on YouTube. You'll be able to find a number of different exercises and things that you can do. But start spending 10 minutes a day. I really think that 10 minutes a day is sufficient to where you can get a lot of work in, and you can really make some improvements. And with a lot of these guys, you know, who say middle school, even younger than that, younger or middle school or high school, guys who haven't been through a very strict regimen before going to a physical program, and they've never put emphasis on a hip mobility program or an ankle mobility program, you can see pretty big results in a very short amount of time. So I would definitely recommend guys start to look into that. And like I said, we can follow up, and I can maybe give you some specific exercises that you can put on your website below this video in the show notes. But that's something that all guys should start to do, is really focus on it and learn how the body works. You know, I'm not asking baseball players to, you don't need to be an anatomy major. You don't have to know every muscle and every ligament and every tendon in the body, but the better understanding you have of how the body works and what different things are supposed to do, I really think it helps translate, and speeds up the learning curve of guys improving and wanting to have better, you know, mobility and stability through their hips and ankles.
Hey, we're talking catching. Talk about catching. You're with Mr. Barksdale. Listen, catching, you know, by far, obviously pitching, they got the ball, they control the game. But without great catchers, you know, your pitchers aren't going to have confidence. I think a lot of us understand why a catcher is so critical. But before we get into some of those areas, I'd like to ask you, what about, you know, you've been through a lot of different changes in the game of baseball when it comes to catching. Talk about some of the things that you used to possibly teach or do that now are changing for the better, or possibly some things that we're still using.
You know, and again, that's funny you mentioned that, because it seems like, you know, baseball has changed a lot over the past 5, 10, 15 years. But even more so than that, and more recently, it seems like the catching position is starting to change really quickly. And most of that stems from the technology in the game, I believe. You know, when I was playing 15 or 20 years ago, our stretching before the game and our pregame routines looked completely different than what they do now. You know, nobody had ever heard, or maybe if they did, they didn't use it. But you talk about dynamic stretching routine where guys are moving around and active for the game. When I played, it was, you know, touch your toes for 15 seconds, bend that, you know, right over left. You know, it was just static stretching. So that's one of the examples that I like to give, because I think guys my age and an older generation can understand and appreciate how much that just the stretching and preparation for practice or games have changed, how much has actually changed inside the game. And then going, you know, with that, I'd say the most recent change in catching is really the kind of just the way guys receive the ball and the way guys, you know, so-called frame or so-called, you know, bring the ball back to the middle of their body. You know, when I was growing up and when I was taught, you didn't do that at all. It was disrespectful to the umpire. It was a no-no, you don't do it. And what we're coming to find out is the way technology has advanced over the past really 3 or 4 years, now there are reliable systems like Hawkeye and TrackMan that can measure strikes, and you can, you know, objectively evaluate catcher based on how many strikes he gets, and compare him to another guy, how many strikes that guy gets. So what we've seen is a big shift in the way that guys receive the ball. And it's a lot different than what we used to think. You know, you used to think, you know, stick the ball, hold it in place, don't move it for the umpire. And now you see guys start to manipulate the ball a little bit more using some different techniques. And those are the guys who are getting more strikes for their pitcher. And those are the ones that are ranking higher in all the catching metrics. So it's been really interesting to watch that. And it's very, very new. You know, it's using the same technology that, you know, you hear about the robo umpires or the electronic strike zones, those type things. You know, using that technology, you can actually objectively grade a catcher instead of me and you both watching somebody receive a pitch. And maybe I think he looks good and you think he looks bad, but there's no real way to measure it. Now we have a way to measure that at the major league level, at least. And that's starting to trickle down to amateur baseball. That technology is still too expensive for most high schools and youth guys to have. But it is an interesting concept how we see it. We see it working at the highest level and then kind of see guys at lower levels try to start to use some of those same techniques.
You know, give us an idea, you know, coaches, especially in the U.S. and around the world who may be working with younger players, give us an idea of some of the, because you could use your hand on the video, you know, kind of like what's changed in the receiving aspect when it comes to a ball, you know, on top, to the side a little bit. What's changed there that makes it easier for, you know, to get the calls?
Sure. Well, let me see if I can back up and hope you can still hear me through the microphone. When I was really young, you talk about changes. So we're talking, you know, 30 years ago when I was learning how to catch, they would talk about going around the strike zone. So a ball for me as a catcher away from a right-handed hitter, you would catch like this and kind of bring it back in, or you'd bring it down from the top or in for the inside part of a plate for right-hand hitter. And even then they used to teach you to come underneath it a long time ago, and that's definitely changed. And then I would say the next wave of catching instructors and catching coaches, they would teach you to stick the ball, you know, or I say stick, to where you really control it, to where when the ball hits your mitt doesn't move anymore. So if you catch it over here, you stick it. If you catch it over here, you stick it. And that's kind of it. You want to give the umpire a clear view of where the ball is, where it crosses the zone. Again, you know, the goal was not to fool the umpire. It wasn't to trick him. It was to give him a clear view and let him call it. And now what you see is guys have much more movement, particularly from the bottom of the strike zone, where they will start their mitt below the ball and they'll come up to catch it and bring it up through the zone. We see a lot more of that. And it even happens on, you know, the east and west axis as well, where guys will try to funnel the ball back towards the middle of their body. And it is a tricky thing to master. You have to be really good at it, because if you overdo it, it looks really bad and you're not fooling anybody. But if you're able to do it, you know, on a small scale, to where it's kind of like a magician, I always say. You know, magicians are successful because they're not making huge flashy movements that people see. They make subtle movements, and the guys who are really good at it move the ball very subtly.
I know one of the areas, and I remember I was at Mickey on baseball school. I'm older than you are, and I umpired there for like 10, 15 years, and I remember catchers trying to catch it and move it, and I used to tell them all the time, you know, I'm calling it when it crosses. I'm not waiting for you to catch it. I don't know if that was true or not, but the biggest one is the one that's to a right-handed hitter that's down and away, that you see them kind of catch it here and then lift the arm. They don't necessarily seem to lift the elbow.
Yeah, correct. You would want to definitely start with the Met. And some guys, again, based on a fastball or breaking ball, different pitchers, some guys will catch what they call flexion to extension. So if I can get on screen for you. So where I'm flexed to extension would be like this, to where I catch out. And some guys will catch extended towards flex. So there's different ways to bring it up, whether it be out and up or almost back and up. There are different ways and different techniques, and part of that is individual. You know, some guys are just better at catching one way over another, and part of it is what type of pitching staff you have. You know, if you have a guy that has a more 12 to 6 curveball, that's going to be a lot different, you know, than a guy that, you know, throws mostly sliders or changeups. So it is individualized, and that's kind of the cool thing about catching right now is there aren't a lot of whole. I'd say there are less, you know, steadfast rules right now that, hey, as a catcher, you have to do this, you have to follow this set of rules. Guys have a lot more freedom and a lot more flexibility. And I think it's interesting. You know, I think we're giving guys more freedom to try different things. And through that, you know, it's just an experimentation phase, seeing what works. And it's definitely not completely figured out by any means yet. Cause like you said, you know, not too long ago, you know, umpires, they don't want you moving the ball. And if I had to guess, I'd say they still probably don't want you moving the ball, but that is what guys are doing and guys are having success. And it's kind of hard to argue with that.
Yeah. What's amazing, I see it because I videotape a lot of the games and I stop the frames and I notice that it might have been a ball, but because they framed it or caught it so well, the angle of the umpire also has something to do with that. Are we studying now umpires, you know, what their calls are, what they call mostly up, down, in, or out, or where their stances are? Is there more technology research going there?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are, and again, this is happening more at the major league level. Like I said, it's going to be less sophisticated for, you know, a high school player, but at the major league level, you know, as a catcher or a pitcher, I'm going to have a scouting report on the umpire, just like I would have a scouting report on the opposing hitter. So I would get a graphic and it would have a hot zone and a cold zone. And it's going to say, you know, maybe Pete, he likes to call balls east and west off the plate, but he doesn't really give too much up and down. So maybe we try to put that into our game plan a little bit. Or other umpires just have different zones, as you know, it can all vary, you know, slightly. But some guys are going to give you more leeway off the bottom. Some guys may give you more leeway on the inside and outside. And we have it. I mean, it's got, you have heat maps of what pitcher strike zones look like. And while you'd like for them all to be the exact same, you know, there's a human element to the game. And guys are just slightly different. So we'll study that and we'll look at that and try to implement that in the game plan. And while it doesn't have too much of an emphasis, you know, we're still going to pitch to our pitcher's strengths. That's still the number one thing we're going to try to do. But you definitely keep that in mind. If, you know, if I think you're umpiring behind me and I know that you like to call them off the plate, I want to do my best job that I can to give you a good view of that. And that kind of goes back to what you were saying a minute ago. Well, another thing that's kind of changed slightly is in catchers, just their stance and their setup. You know, we talked about the knee being down, but one thing we didn't talk about is the angling of the body. You know, we used to always be completely squared off to the pitcher. And now, you know, again, depending on the situation and what's going on and who's where, you know, sometimes we try to angle our body so that if you're on the inside shoulder, hey, maybe I want to give you a better view and you can really see that inside corner. Or if I know my pitcher stays away, I might try to move my body so that you have a better view of the outside corner. Again, depending on, you know, what strategy we have and what our game plan is. But there's like I said, it's flexible and it's fluid, and guys have a lot more freedom now to try different things than they ever had before. And that's one thing that's cool and it's fun to watch in just kind of the catching world.
You know, that's a great point. And I think your video went off just a little bit. Let me make sure. We're in different areas, so we could be having some technical difficulties. Zan, you still there?
I got you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. They may not be able to see you because it froze, but they could still hear, so we're good. Listen, the other area, you mentioned the catching aspect, you know, the different stances. Receiving has become the number one thing, obviously, because of the calling, and you get a lot more calls. The catching stances are different in many ways. There you go. We got you back on. The catching stances are different in many ways, which also helps the receiving and the calls of the balls and strikes. So which ones, you know, give us an idea. What are some of the stances that they're using now? Would you recommend them for younger players also?
Yeah, and this is where I think I'll say this. I think the things you're seeing happen at the major league level, and this is just my personal opinion. Somebody may feel different, and that's completely okay. I think they're going to be more effective at the major league level than they would be at the amateur level, simply because everything is going to be more consistent there. So the umpires, you know, the major league umpires, they're the best in the world. They're going to be their zone is going to be as accurate as anybody out there. The strike zones, they're going to be, you know, very close. Yes, there's some differences in different guys, but they're going to be very close. And then you have radars and you have umpires being reviewed during the game, just like they have instant replay for plays. After a game, an umpire gets a stat sheet of which calls they got correct, which ones they got incorrect, and they're graded on that. That's how they're graded. So those guys are good. They get graded. And because they have that level of precision, I think some of these techniques are a little bit more effective there than they would be if we, I live in Kentucky, so let's say a small high school in Kentucky where the umpires, no offense umpires, it's just a lot lower level of baseball. The zone is going to be much different. The pitchers can't execute their pitches to as high a level of precision, so they're going to be throwing the ball over the places. Their misses are going to be bigger, so I may set up inside to a righty, but they're going to, you know, not miss by 3 or 4 inches. They may be missing by 15 or 16 inches, you know. So there's just a lot more air and there's a lot more things going on. So I don't think it's as valuable at the lower levels, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't say don't practice it and don't do it. You know, if you have aspirations to play at a high level, I think you need to try to learn what those guys are doing. Why does it work? What works for you? How can we become better? And kind of find a hybrid. It doesn't mean just go pick out your favorite player on MLB, you know, and do exactly what he does, but it would be a good idea to start playing with some of those things. And so you're talking about the stances. You know, we used to have, we'd say there were three stances. We'd say there was a signal stance, a primary stance, and a secondary stance. Now the primary stance would be when nobody's on base, and a secondary stance would be when somebody's on base or there's two strikes on the hitter and you have to block the ball in the dirt. And those would be look very traditional. Pretty much every catcher would have the exact same looking stance, where now you have guys, even when there's runners on base, they still may have a knee on the ground. So they may have a right knee down. We call it a right knee down or left knee down. Some guys have a kickstand, which would be similar to the old, Benito Santiago or Tony Pena or one of those type guys that had the leg kicked out to the side. And these are, those stances take a little bit more, I don't know if effort's the right word, but you have to play with it. And you have to get your bearings down so you can block out of those stances and you can throw out of those stances. So where it used to be completely unheard of for, hey, there's a runner on first base and it's a steal situation, I'm going to be in a knee down stance. Like that would just be like, it wouldn't make sense to people, but now it's a lot more common. But like I said, that's where it does come into play. If you're going to catch with your right knee down or your left knee down, you have to practice throwing out of those positions. You have to practice blocking out of those positions. So there's a lot that goes into it. And like I said, it was funny. I was on another call the other day, just a group of catching guys online on one of those Zoom calls. And guys were talking about that exact same thing. A guy said, if I had to write a book or a paper or teach somebody, you know, how do you get in a right knee down or left knee down stance? I'd say, man, it's really difficult because there's so many different variables and, you know, different players have different anatomy and different strengths and different weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And it can change, you know, it can change from pitch to pitch. Just because I'm right knee down right now, maybe that's a good position for me to block a ball out of, but it's not a position for me to be a great thrower out of. And so sometimes what you'll see now, even, which is crazy, but guys will change mid pitch. So they'll start, let's say, up in more of a traditional secondary stance. And as soon as the pitch is delivered, if the runner does not take off, they'll immediately drop one of their knees and transition into a one knee down stance. So like I said, there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. And I'd be willing to bet, I don't know if we'll have any Major League Baseball this year or not, but whenever we are able to start watching professional baseball on TV again, I bet you'll see at least about half the guys in the big leagues do that. I don't know if it's made its way to every organization yet, but it's definitely, it's moving that direction and it probably will before too long.
You know, Zan, one of the questions would be if I'm in the, and I love the different positions and I love that catchers are more athletic nowadays. You see a lot of athletic catchers in the big leagues. If you're in a kickstand or if you're in one knee or even a regular stance, not necessarily with a runner on base, but you still have a one stance for everything. there's got to be a technique where I have to anticipate where the ball's going to be, and I got to start something, but I also can't get up too early to interfere, you know, with the call, because the strike is, and striking ball is so important also. What's something, I know you can't show it exactly on video, but what's something that they need to think about getting out of that stance to be able to throw a runner out?
Well, and that's a good question, because there are some different things you can do. And one of the things that I would say is that there are a few guys who have implemented it a lot. Mitch Garver with the Twins did it. There was some video, a friend of mine, Tanner Swanson, who just got the job in the Yankees big leagues. He had Gary Sanchez, I think, trying to try that this spring. There was some video floating around of him working on Twitter. And you just see guys trying different things. Unfortunately, I haven't got to watch him, you know, play an entire season at stance yet. But what you'll see is a lot of it's similar. You know, there's certain things that, you know, if I'm a shortstop or a pitcher or a catcher, you know, when I throw, there's certain things that have to happen. For me, my back foot or my plant foot has to be on the ground before my front foot. So even if I'm in a one knee stance, it's still going to be similar, where I still have to take a small step with my right foot, and then my left foot would land, and then my body's going to square up to my target. And again, there are some slight differences and slight variations. So but for the most part, things don't change.
Time, I guess, is what I'm asking.
A lot of guys, they are not. But I'll tell you what I think. This is just my prediction. This is not, I don't know if it'll happen or won't. I think we're going to start seeing more guys throw from two knees, again, like the old Benito Santiago, as we see more guys transitioning into knee-down stances. I think from a lot of the guys I've worked with, and again, if you have enough arm strength, which is not everybody, but if you have enough arm strength, a lot of guys can throw the ball to second just as quickly from two knees down as they can standing up. So that's one of the things I'm really interested to watch and see over the next couple of years, because I might be wrong, but I'm predicting that more guys transition into throwing it from their knees, you know, regularly, not just, you know, once a season or twice a season, but that's just how they throw. That's their throwing mechanics.
Now, if you were talking to high school coaches, travel coaches, I mean, even some youth coaches, advice with the catchers when it comes to dealing with the umpire or positioning, or, you know, again, trying to get that call, any suggestions that they could use to help their catchers?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is, you know, always encourage your catcher to build a relationship with the umpires. One of the things that I spoke about in CatcherCon, my conference this past year, was there's no reason that we shouldn't almost have a cheat sheet of the umpire, and you know, we know that guy, because let's be honest, if I'm in Maysville, Kentucky, there aren't a whole lot of high school umpires around here. Okay, so I'm going to have the same guy probably for my entire high school career. You know, that guy's going to catch or umpire a lot of games together, and we're going to get to know each other very well. Build a relationship, get to know him, you know, speak to him, shake his hand before the game. Obviously, be respectful. But when you do build that relationship, you can actually ask, hey, you know, I'm going to try some different things today. I'm going to angle my body a little bit. Would you please tell me if you can see the pitch better? Does this give you a better view or a worse view? Because the last thing I want to do is mess you up. I don't want to make your job any harder. And I think those conversations are a lot easier to have, you know, once you have a relationship, because, you know, part of it is just the age gap. A lot of times you may have a 15 or 16 year old kid, and they're not as comfortable, you know, speaking to adults in that conversational type tone. So if you can build a relationship with them, and you can just ask them and have an open, honest relationship, I think it'll be better. And I think umpires will be more than willing to give you feedback. Like, yeah, I like that. That gives me a better view. I can see that much more easily now. Good, you know, try to keep working on that. And I think that's a very good indicator.
Great stuff. Now, I want to go back a second and make sure I got it right. When you're talking about receiving with young players, you want them to hold the ball for a second there, right? I mean, not too long, but they need to hold it, not bring it back in too much.
You know, and that's a debate where some guys go different ways. You know, now that we see some guys, Tyler Flowers, you know, he does it a lot. JT Realmuto does it a lot. We've seen a lot of other guys throughout the big leagues. You know, they have a lot more movement, and they're a lot more fluid. And me personally, I think one of the reasons that it's effective at, you know, stealing strikes is because it does make it harder for the umpire. Like you said, if you just hold it there, I think it gives the umpire a better view of exactly where the pitch was, where it crossed the plate. But when everything's so fluid and everything's moving, now it makes the umpire guess a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I think umpires, and again, this is just hearsay. This is my opinion. But if an umpire has to guess and a pitch is borderline, I think they're more likely to call strikes than balls just for the pace of play, and they want to keep the game moving. And you know, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. If it's that close and you don't really know, it was probably good enough to be called a strike.
Hey, Ryan. Oh, Ryan. I was just going to say, Ryan Cienko and I had this discussion, and I want to get your opinion on this. You know, we probably should have started with this because everything is visual, right? I mean, yep. We hit, we catch, we feel. I mean, if your vision's not there, if you don't understand how to use your vision, is there any tip you can give? Because, you know, if a catcher, I would assume if a catcher sees the ball earlier, they could also anticipate where it's going to be and not be there late. Is there any tips on, you know, how some training that catchers can do to help them?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you one example that I recently saw on Twitter. And if you're a catching guy, I'd probably follow you on Twitter. So I try to keep up with what's going on. I saw a really creative, it was a college coach, and I've forgotten which school he was at off the top of my head. But a couple of weeks ago, he posted a drill that he did with his catchers. And he simply got, I don't know if you've seen, it's probably in the kids section at Walmart or a toy store where you have magnetic letters that would go on your refrigerator. Okay. Mm-hmm. He got a pack of these magnetic letters, and inside their indoor facility every day, he would jumble them up and put them all over the place. And he would have a partner time him on how long it took him to find each letter. So maybe the partner, you know, is going through the list and he says R, and the catcher has to find it, you know, with his eye, trying to keep your head still, but trying to track it with his eyes and find it. And it's just a vision drill that I thought was super creative, and anybody could spend a couple of dollars and get those. And he said that he did a study with it. And again, I'll try to find it so we can put it in the show notes for you. But he did a study, and his catchers, you know, when they started, by the time they finished, how much, I think they took about half their time off. Wow. So again, is it a direct correlation to seeing a pitch? I don't know if that's exactly the direct, but I think it's very purposeful, and I love the creativity that coach had. And that's definitely something that I would do with guys, especially this time of year when, you know, you can't, maybe you don't have a machine at your house, but you probably do have a metal wall, or you could put them on your car, or you could put them on your refrigerator, and you could go and practice for 2 minutes a day and just work on your vision as a catcher. So that's one thing that, Ryan, very smart catching coach, a guy that I respect a lot. He's absolutely onto something there, but that would be one thing that I would suggest guys try for, you know, a couple of bucks you can probably find on Amazon. And just, you know, start working your vision that way. I've seen some hitting guys and some vision guys have similar processes where you try to find numbers or letters, you know, on the wall, or you have lights and that type thing. Mm-hmm. And it's probably just a lower tech version of that.
Now, as a catcher, what did you look at when pitchers were pitching? Where were you trying to focus on to identify, you know, where the ball's coming from?
You know, it's funny you asked that. I was thinking about it the other day as I read a discussion online again. It was talking about, you know, how a lot of hitters are taught to have, you know, soft focus here, and then you look over here. That was one thing that, I'll be honest, I never put a whole lot of emphasis on. I don't think I actively thought about that a whole lot. Uh-huh. I think it's one of those things you just kind of, you know, you naturally watch your pitcher and you watch his mechanics and see what he does, and then at some point you shift focus to its release point. But yeah, I wish I had a better answer for you, but that's something that I think just kind of comes naturally. I think if you try to overthink that, I think that's when you kind of get yourself in trouble, and you'll get stiff and you'll get tight. And if you look for something minute, you know, it can be difficult as you just try to stay relaxed. And along that line of staying relaxed, one thing I think is important is really teaching guys to breathe, which sounds simple, but yeah. If you can be behind the plate and take a deep breath and calm, you can relax yourself down. You can slow your heartbeat. And a relaxed catcher is going to outperform a stiff catcher any day of the week.
You know, and catchers have obviously so much of a responsibility. I mean, they're so critical in the game, you know, and we started talking about, you know, framing and receiving because pitch calling seems to be the number one thing, or not calling, pitch framing seems the number one thing because you can get more strikes, as we talked about, if you do it well. Obviously, there's other skills that guys need to work on. Eventually, Unfortunately, but it might happen. You know, you might have a electronic strike zone, and that's going to take away framing. What's going to be the next skill? What are the next skills that, if you were to categorize them for a catcher, that the top three or four that catchers really need to focus on to get better, to become better as a package? What are those three or four top skills?
Yeah, and honestly, I think that's going to happen at some point. I don't know if that's 2 years away. I don't know if it's 5 years away. But the technology with the electronic strike zone, I'm not going to say it's perfect yet, but it's getting much better at a very fast pace. So I would say within a couple of years, it's probably going to be good enough to where they can implement it. So if I had to guess, I would say that that's going to come sooner than later. It's going to turn the position into much more offensively first. I mean, you know, being a hitter is probably going to is going to change. You know, the way baseball has shifted over the past couple of years, it's become much more of a power, you know, whether it be power arms or power bats, the stolen base numbers are down dramatically across the board. So catchers are having fewer and fewer opportunities to throw runners out. So, you know, the throw tool, as you call it, has kind of lost some of its value. So I would say the blocking aspect is going to be very important, because there are going to be some pitchers who, you know, like a Clayton Kershaw, and he's a great example. Honestly, if he has that big breaking ball, it's going to clip the bottom of the zone, and it would still literally be called for a strike, even though a catcher may have to block it because it has such break and it clips the very bottom of the zone. So I think more guys would try to focus on stuff like that. So I think the block's going to be important. The throwing is always going to be important, even though it's not as valuable as it probably used to be. You know, for a long time, it seemed like the number one way you graded a catcher or scouted a catcher or evaluated a catcher was what kind of thrower is. You know, if he throws a 1-8, he's fantastic. If he throws a 2-1, he's average. You know, I think that's going to change. But it's not going to go away completely. But just kind of the way the game has shifted, the throwing has become less important. So I know that's kind of a long answer to a short question. But, you know, the offense is probably going to become more important. Right now, the way the receiving metrics and things have changed that we talked about, teams are putting emphasis on guys that can receive the ball well, even if that comes at the expense of being a questionable offensive player. I think that's going to completely flip. I think they're going to want guys who can really hit and then are able to, you know, block and throw secondarily.
If we were to ask you, let's say I'm a catcher. I got to get better at throwing. I got to get my time better. Obviously, the simple answer is you got to do it over and over in practice. And we all know the body sometimes can adjust a little bit and get better. But you as a coach, if you're with them, what can you do? What kind of technique or what kind of advice can you give them to increase their ability to get the ball there quicker?
Yeah, so and I have a camp that I spent a lot of time working on that and studying on that and working with players. And it really comes down to two different things. There's two different main variables. It's number one, your quickness. From the time you catch the ball, how long does it take you to release it? And then secondary is your arm strength, or not secondary, but second is your arm strength, which once you do release it, how fast is the ball traveling in the air to get to second base? Through the studies that I've done and the guys that I've broken down, you know, if you want to be an elite thrower, you have to do both very well. You have to be good at both. But I think where most guys can make an immediate adjustment and an immediate improvement is working on trying to get rid of the ball quicker versus trying to gain more arm strength. Because you and I both know, you know, for a guy who's developed, it's really difficult, you know, to gain 5 miles an hour. So if I'm a high school, let's say pitcher, and I throw 88 to 93 is a big jump. You know, 5 miles an hour is a big jump for any position player, you know, and again, as you're younger and you're growing, it changes more rapidly. But as you start to physically mature, those numbers slow down and they become harder to achieve. Or if you're a pitcher that throws 90, it's a lot harder to go from 90 to 95. But as a catcher, I think, you know, if you're going to talk about spending a year or 2 years on trying to gain 5 miles an hour, I think our time is much better spent immediately in the short term, trying to improve our footwork and trying to improve our arm path, shortening up and becoming as efficient as possible so that we can release the ball as quickly as possible. I think with most of the guys that I see at the younger levels, that's where they can make an immediate impact. And yes, that doesn't mean neglect the arm strength, the long toss, the trying to throw harder per se, but that just takes longer. It takes longer to happen. The guys that I see, you can make a pretty quick impact if you can get your feet to move a little quicker, if you can clean up your mechanics, become more efficient behind the plate, and continue to work on your arm strength, but definitely focus on the quickness first.
one of the things that maybe hasn't changed, are we still trying to throw the ball four seams down the second base?
Yeah, I think that's what guys are still trying to do if you're able to. And, you know, sometimes you get a great four-seam grip, sometimes you get a two-seam, sometimes you get a changeup grip, but you try to get a four-seam grip as much as possible.
Sure. And I don't want to sound like to our folks out there, thank you for joining us on Facebook Live. We're going to put Zan's stuff all over Facebook. We'll have his Twitter, his information on CatcherCon, and also his website. I got to check out CatcherCon. So I'm going to let you talk about it at the end, tell about, you know, who attends and what it's all about. But if you were to, and I was going to say, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, the catcher's not the only one responsible for getting that runner or holding that runner. There's a pitcher and there's infielders. It's a team aspect. But the better the catcher is, obviously that makes it a lot easier. But if you were to give advice on who you study, when you look at video, who are the catchers you're studying because they're really doing some really great stuff? And that means others can look at it and study it, and players can look at it and also visualize what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I think JT Realmuto, I want to say he led the big leagues statistically in throwing last year. And again, like I said, you know, the numbers of stolen base attempts have gone down across the board. I don't know if we'll ever see another Ricky Henderson again who steals that many bags, just because the way, at least not in this era or this phase. But a guy like JT Realmuto, he's fantastic. He throws great. Yan Gomes, he's really good. And like I said, these are guys who definitely combine, you know, the footwork with the arm strength. Yadi's always been one of, you know, most players, or, you know, a lot of young players, he's a catcher that most guys look up to. There's a lot of really good throwing catchers. And I do think that's part of the reason that the stolen base numbers are down. You know, just the threat of having that, you know, plus throw tool really discourages opposing teams from stealing. And yeah, like you said, the pitchers are involved, the middle infielders are involved. But when, you know, you're an opposing coach and you watch the other team in pregame warmups or in between innings and the catcher fires one down to second and it looks like a frozen rope, you know, you're definitely a little more hesitant and a little bit less likely to give the steal sign. So yes. There's a lot that goes into it, but yeah, you can definitely intimidate other players. I think that goes on in the big leagues too.
Sure. And, you know, something I was thinking about, which this is probably a question you get all the time, but I want to bring it up because I think it's important. I want to start with the younger levels because I realize it could be slightly different at different levels, but you hear this all the time. Calling pitches, who's going to make that decision? Is it a progressive thing? Is it a learning process? Some advice on that.
Yeah, so, and that's something that I've thought about a lot. It's funny you mentioned it because I started writing a book on it a couple of years ago, and it's one of those topics that just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding, and it's been about 80% done or 90% done for the past 2 years. I got to finish it up. But that's actually the first thing I talk about in the book is who should call the pitches. You know, should it be the coach or should it be the players? And when we talk about the players, ultimately the responsibility boils down to the pitcher. You know, even though the catcher is the one putting the suggestion down, if the players are calling it, the pitcher's the one that he is the one getting his name put next to the W or the L. He's the one that needs to have confidence in his pitch and needs to feel good about it and get behind it. But I do think it changes at different levels. And what we're seeing is, you know, at the younger levels, whether it be high school or summer ball or college ball, you know, a lot of the coaches are calling the pitches because they might do a better job than one of the players do. And I'll just be completely honest. I kind of agree with that at some point. You know, if you're a college coach, I spent 10 years in college coaching. We spent a lot of time going over the scouting reports for the opposing team. We would watch videos. We'd break them down. We'd talk to the other coaches. Where the players, I know they want to win. I know they're trying the best they can, but they're not spending the same amount of time and energy and effort studying the opposing hitters, looking at videos, reviewing past years of notes. So as a coach, you're probably a little prepared, and also you kind of feel like your job is on the line. You know, if we lose, if we go, 20-40 this season, I'm probably getting fired. So you want to hold that responsibility in your hands. But with that said, from a development standpoint, you know, only way to really get better at doing it is doing it. So I think most of, you know, you asked about the young guys specifically. I would encourage people to really take a hybrid approach. And it doesn't mean it has to be all or nothing or one way and that's it. So if you're my coach, maybe in the first inning, you know, you come out and you call the pitches. And if our pitcher's on today, you might say, hey, Zan, you know, you and John, you take it over for the next inning. Let's see how it goes. If we have a good inning, maybe you let me continue to call him or us continue to call him. Or if it doesn't go so well, maybe when we get back to the dugout, you say, hey, Zan, why'd you throw the three-hole hitter, you know, the 3-1 change, whatever it is. But just start to have a conversation and start to teach. But I think the important thing to realize is it doesn't have to be all one or all the other. You know, a lot of times I do watch high school games and I watch college games or summer games when it's a blowout and a team is winning, you know, 12-2 in the third inning and the coach is still calling the pitches. For me, that's a situation where yeah. It's a great time. Man, give it, let the players call it. You know, I get it. You wanted to call them early. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But you have to understand, you know, when to switch it on and off and let those guys take over. So it's a tricky concept. I don't think there's one exact way to do it, but I would say try to split up the responsibility some.
Great info. Great. Love it. What about pitch calling when it comes, you get a runner on base, give us just a couple things you might do with a runner on base, how you might change the sign.
A good example of that. I remember being a young player, my first year in pro ball with the Braves. You have to learn the situation and learn the game and learn what's going on. Where, for example, I think, let's say a leadoff guy hits a double. And looking back on it, I feel dumb. I feel how ignorant I was. You know, I made a poor decision. But leadoff guy hits a double, and then the first batter or the first pitch to the next batter, I think I called the fastball away. And what's the batter to a right-handed hitter? And what's he trying to do? His goal was to hit a ground ball to second base. So I gave him the perfect pitch to do it on, you know, just kind of without thinking, I didn't put as much thought into the actual game and the big picture of the game as I did. I was thinking about this hitter and what can we do to him and set him up when you have to, you know, kind of step back and look at the game situationally and, you know, strategically. And that's where I would say that most young guys struggle. You know, they may not have, they may be pretty good at understanding this hitter does this. Maybe he has these strengths and these weaknesses, but you have to also put that in the context of what's going on in the game. What's the situation? What's the score? Where are the runners? Where are they in the order? And kind of just taking back and taking a big picture look at it.
You know, something, we're coming to the end. I really appreciate all. It's been fantastic, man. One of the best in the business. And then we're going to talk about CatcherCon too. I won't forget it. The mental part of this, you know, catcher, man, I mean, I'm assuming they got to be tough. They got to be tough mentally. They got to be smart. I mean, how do you deal with the mental aspect of catching? Give us some advice there. I know it's a general question, but, you know, I would think you got to be mentally tough back then. What does that really mean?
Man, that's exactly what I was going to ask you next. That's one of my favorite things to talk about is, you know, a lot of people you hear talk about is we want guys who are mentally tough, you know, but when you have to break that down, well, what does mentally tough mean? What, you know, is it been able to overcome adversity or what is your definition? I think it's a very vague term that a lot of people have different definitions of, but I'll say this. So one thing that I like to teach guys, I like to tell guys, and I spoke about this at the ABCA a couple of years ago, is when you're a catcher, you may have to step outside your comfort zone and step outside your personality. So the example I use is I went to school at Ole Miss. When I was at Ole Miss, Eli Manning was our quarterback there. Okay. Now he's a super reserved, introverted type guy. And I don't have a personal relationship with him, but just generally speaking, he's a more quiet guy. Okay. But when he was on the field, you could hear him audibling when you watch the game. I mean, through the TV speakers, you could hear him, you know, ready, whatever he was yelling, he was loud. He projected his voice. Yeah. And so I tell our catchers, we have to do the same thing. Hey, if off the field, if you want to be quiet, you want to be a bookworm and you want to be introverted, man, I got no problem with that at all. I think that's great. That's fine. It's how you choose to be. But when the game is going and the lights are on, you have to be loud. You have to take charge. You have to be a good communicator. And I think being a good communicator is understanding how to talk to people, but it's also being able to project your voice, learning when to speak up, learning when, you know, when to, whether it be a cutoff or a relay. You know, there's a lot of different things that go on. You just have to take charge and be in charge on the field. You can't sit back and wait for everything to happen to you. You have to be one of the guys directing everybody else, even if that's not necessarily your personality. Like I said, if you're a quiet guy or shy, you know, it doesn't make you a bad person. But when you're catching, when you're in the game, we've got to be loud, we've got to be extroverted, and we've got to be a great communicator.
You know, I would assume that when you're talking about that, it's just like the pitch calling, as far as calling pitches. You know, if I'm starting off on a travel team at 15 years old or 14 years old as a catcher or earlier, you know, that's the responsibility also of our coaches to begin teaching them, not in games only, but in practice, to be able to do those things. Because, you know, we all grew up, you know, I'm an introvert. As a young kid, I wasn't talking to anybody. I still don't talk to anybody unless somebody approaches me. So isn't it a teaching process? We can't just tell kids to do that.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that, because actually one of my favorite stories from, you know, before I played Ole Miss, I played junior college ball for 2 years. And my coach, Kenny DuPont, who actually just retired after this season, he would force us to be loud and force us to communicate. And so the joke that I tell people is, for 4 semesters I was at junior college, I lost my voice 4 times the first week of practice of every semester, because we would have to yell. So if we had PFPs, and let's say, again, maybe we had 20 guys that would pitch. I don't know what the exact number was, but 20 guys would pitch. Every time we had a PFP, as a catcher, you had to yell, "Stay down, step and throw. One. I mean, I was the only catcher, me and one other guy. So we're going back and forth. You were screaming nonstop for about 30 minutes, and you'd literally lose your voice to where you couldn't talk. But it taught me that, wow, man, when I'm on the field, I've got to be loud. I've got to tell these guys what to do. And that definitely took me out of my comfort zone. I played at a small high school in Mississippi. I graduated with 48 people. You know, there were no crowds. You didn't have to yell over anybody. And then when you got to college, I learned that skill set. But I would say it's definitely a learned skill set. It's not you're born with it, you're loud or you're not, you're a good communicator or you're not. It's something that you learn how to do. And as a coach, I think you can definitely help nudge players in the right direction by doing things like that in practice, forcing them to communicate after bullpens or during bullpens. You know, you must actively communicate with pitchers. If your pitcher, you know, throws a great pitch, you must give him confirmation, give him feedback, good pitch. Or if he throws a poor pitch, you know, you've got to give him some sort of affirmation, or maybe you have to say, "Hey man, come on." You just have to talk to him. You have to learn that. But that's one thing I do, you know, also is coaching the catchers, is I don't allow catchers just to be quiet in bullpens. You don't just get to sit back there and catch it and throw it and never communicate. You have to learn to communicate with the pitcher. And I think it carries over pretty naturally once you kind of start to learn that.
You know, that's a great point that we didn't discuss. And let's hit that for a second here. But a lot of times when you catch in a bullpen, you know, a lot of young catchers think, "Oh man, I got to go down there and catch the pitcher." Talk about what the process down there is, because you could actually get better at everything while you're down there.
And not only can you get better, it's probably the best time to get better, you know, because if you have a defensive session in a practice, you're probably going to do some receiving, you're probably going to do some blocking, you're probably going to do some throwing or another skill. Maybe it's fielding bunts or catching pop flies or tag plays at the plate, but you're not going to get the opportunity to catch a live speed, you know, pitching, whether it be fastball, curveball, slider, all the different pitches your pitchers throw, and the ability to learn your pitching staff at the same time. The catcher, one of the reasons that I think a lot of catchers go on to be good coaches is because they just simply spend more time around the coaches. When you're not playing or practice, you're in the bullpen, and you may catch 4 pitchers that day. So the pitcher, he was with the pitching coach one-on-one, you know, for X amount of time. As a catcher, I spent 4 times the amount of time with that pitching coach than our pitcher did. So I think it's a really good opportunity just to learn. You know, we can learn the different cues, what works for some guys, what doesn't work for some guys. Some guys need a kick in the rear. Some guys need a pat on the back. You know, every pitcher is different. And they have different personalities. I think you learn that starting in the bullpens. You learn the cues that works for them. But then also, you know, a lot of young guys too, they sit back there and they receive. Now, especially like we kind of opened up with, that's a perfect time to try all your different stances. If you want to work on a one knee, a right knee down or a left knee down, try it. If you want to work on your footwork throwing to second. No reason you can't do that in the bullpen. It doesn't mean you have to just catch it and throw it right back. Go through your footwork and then throw it back. Work on your pitch outs. Work on different things instead of just simply catching back there and, you know, and feel like you're wasting your time. But I feel like it starts with the attitude of, okay, this is my time to get better. I'm going to be down here for the next 30 minutes and I'm going to catch four guys. And this is my work. This is my opportunity to get better for the day.
You know what? Love it. And I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of time in Japan. I'm going to throw this at you too. I'm sure you do it. And I watch the Japanese at the major league level, at the World Baseball Classic level. During BP, there's always a catcher. Yes, it helps the pitcher that's throwing. Sometimes they're throwing live BP with pitchers. But then the catcher's getting work also. So there's another great opportunity to get work. I would think you'd want to do that anytime you know it's possible without getting catchers too tired.
Yeah, you know, I think there is I think there's a give and take to it. There's definitely some benefits you can get from it. You just have to weigh that on your negatives. You know, I don't know how many games you're playing. If you're a big leaguer and you're a starter and you're going to catch 130 games throughout the year, you know, you probably don't need that work. But if you're a younger player and you're, you know, let's say you're in middle school and you're on a fall ball team and y'all are going to play 8 games this fall, then yeah, that's an opportunity maybe where you can get back there and practice receiving some and see some different things. So I think that's kind of on a case-by-case basis, just depending on what level you are and your age and a number of things like that.
Super. This has been awesome. Two things want to talk about at the end here. One, I want you to talk about CatcherCon, but two, also any last-minute advice, you know, that you want to give coaches when it comes to catching? Because, you know, you could talk catching for 5 hours, 10 hours. But something maybe we missed. So go ahead and talk about that and also CatcherCon.
Well, I would say the first advice that I give to coaches are the community of catching coaches is a really cool community. And that it's kind of tied into CatcherCon, I guess. But if you get online, you know, 10 years ago, when Twitter was brand new or the internet was younger, there was very little catching information available. And now, because of what's happened over the past couple of years, the catching position is kind of, you know, I say make catching cool again, make catching great again. It's become popular. It's become cool. And a lot more guys want to work with catchers. They're excited to share their ideas, their information. And I would say network with guys. You know, if you get on, and again, I referenced Twitter a couple times because there's a lot of different things going on there. Man, the hitting Twitter or the pitching Twitter, there seem to be arguments popping up nonstop, and somebody's mad at somebody, or they don't like the way they teach this or teach that. But catching Twitter is really cool. I call it the brotherhood. You know, it's people who are, there's no arguments, and doesn't mean you always agree 100% with everybody, but everybody's super respectful, super generous in giving time. If you email or write one of these guys, whether it be me or Ryan Cienko or anybody or Tanner Swanson, who I mentioned earlier, or any of these guys, I can imagine these guys are going to respond to, you know, you're not going to get blown off. And I know everybody's busy, but you respond to guys like that. And it's just kind of the way the catching brotherhood is. So really try to open up your network and expand who you know, and you know, kind of start taking in some of this information guys are putting out, which is kind of a good segue into CatcherCon, which is the conference that I started, I guess about five, it'll be 6 years this year. It's a conference where each December we bring in 8 coaches in Nashville, Tennessee, and we have a 1 weekend that's just solely based around catching. We have guys are each given different topics and different presentations. So there's some overlap in topics, but there's not too much overlap where you're going to get to hear from guys who coach at the big league level, all in professional baseball, to private instructors, to high school coaches. We've even had major league umpires there before. I'll have another umpire there this year. This year I'll have a mobility expert as well. I'll have strength training coaches who talk about the different demands of the position. So it's just a great opportunity to go and learn. But kind of, you know, hitting off the other thing I just said is, you know, the attendance is, it's a small, intimate event. It's not huge. There's not 500 people there. But you're going to get to know who's who in the catching world. Last year, of the 30 organizations, we had 13 professional organizations represented there. I think we had 12 the year before. So it's growing in the major league world, the professional world. And then just all the guys that, you know, that you do see online on Twitter or Facebook that are putting out catching information, pretty much all of them are there. So it's a great place to go and meet other people and spread your network and just kind of, you know, stay up to date with what's going on. Because like we talked about, you know, as we first opened the show, things are changing very fast. It's amazing looking back.
even from the first year of CatcherCon, how some things were taught to last year, there have been a lot of big differences, and a lot of things have you know, really come full circle in really a short amount of time.
You know, and finally, we are getting to the end, folks. I want to thank you for joining us on the show. But I do want to mention, you know, as a coach, I mean, especially a young coach, we don't have pitching coaches a lot of times. We don't have catching coaches. So you know, it's important to learn those two the best you can, because that is the game right there. If you have great pitching, great catching, what a great way to start. So what do you do as a coach to make yourself better?
Well, that's one of the things I'm big on, continuing education. Okay, so for me, I like to read a lot, and I don't necessarily just read baseball books. I read a lot of, business books or leadership books or management books, or there's a lot of different type personal growth type books. There's a lot of things I like to do on that. But I also do attend other conferences. I attend the ABCA conference they put on each year. I go to CatcherCon. My buddy Lance Wheeler has a pitching event called Pitchapalooza. And it's last year, I think he had about 700 people at it. I think every major league organization was there except for one. So it's huge. But I feel like as a catching guy, like you just said, I need to know what's going on in the pitching world. If I want to be the best catching coach I can, I need to know what the pitching guys are teaching. Where are those trends going? How are those guys being taught? And let's be honest too, you know, when it comes to gaining arm strength and throwing, the pitching guys have been on the forefront for the past probably a couple of decades. Mm-hmm. You know, the long toss techniques, whether it be, you know, Alan Jager or it be the plyo balls from Driveline and Kyle Bodie and those guys, the pitching guys have kind of started that revolution. So there's a lot of things that we can learn from those guys. I think it's just important to be there. And there's some other ones that I go to as well, but those are definitely the biggest ones. Try to stay in contact, try to continue to learn, try to expand my network. And just realize that, you know, you never have it all figured out. You never know anything. Even as the guy who puts on the catching conference each year, I'm taking notes upon notes upon notes, and just trying to learn as much as I can, because everybody you meet knows something different than you.
Yeah, and I think the best to understand, once you think you know it all, you might as well get out of the game.
You got that right.
Just when you're in trouble. You know, the other thing, and we'll end it with this, is we'll put all your information on the show notes in case people want to ask you, you know, what kind of books you read and all that. But this is a whole new topic, but I do want you to mention, I noticed on your Twitter you recommend a book called Hacking Darwin, Genetic Engineering. Now, this has got to be a whole new gambit on development.
Yeah, it's really neat. And so I'm about 2/3 of the way through it, but it basically kind of explains the science of genetic engineering. And it kind of predicts what's going to happen in the future. How, I guess the most basic example I could give you is if a child is born with, say, a genetic disease. Okay. It talks about the technology that's in place right now and how it's moving, so that the future doctors are going to be able to prevent that by looking at the cells while they're, you know, in the embryo or even before the embryo, and how the methods they use to change it. And a lot of it's over my head, but it's really cool when you think about these things that we're going to be able to prevent diseases, and in the not too near distant future. It sounds crazy, but parents are going to have a lot of options, you know, with genetic engineering, and what traits would they like to pass on to their children, and would they not? So it's definitely an interesting topic. I don't pretend to be an expert on it, but it is very thought provoking. And it's something that if that sounds interesting to you, you know, definitely think about checking out.
You and I may not be around, but we may have genetic catchers, you know, where we start, you know, engineering catchers out of birth, but that's for a whole different story. Hey, listen, I want to thank Mr. Barksdale. And if you're wondering why I'm calling him Mr. Barksdale on Facebook or on Twitter, simply because I screwed up his name a couple times and two out of respect. So that's why I call him Mr. Barksdale. But hey, listen, want to thank you for being on the show, man. This has been fantastic.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. Like I said, I've been following you for a while and appreciate the work you do and the podcast and info you put out there. So keep up the good work, and thanks for having me on. Maybe we can do it again sometime.
Oh, awesome. Definitely got to continue this. And we're going to ask also, I'd love to see come on an ISG, International Sports Group, Coaches Conference. We do them all over the world. So hopefully we'll get together and get you on one of those.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
All right, folks. Thanks for joining us. I am Pete Caliendo, host of Baseball Outside the Box. Don't forget, check us out at baseballoutsidethebox.com. I want to thank all our listeners. Thank you to our producer, Brian Kroc of the Lineup Media Group. Thank you to all our listeners. Continue to share everything. Thanks to our Facebook followers. And if you have any questions, please email me at petercaliendo@att.net. I want to wish you a safe day. We'll be back on the baseball field soon. God bless you all and catch you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.